yours better be the best tasting beer in the world. You got lucky.
21 gigawatts!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Susie Q, what's cooking with you?
Your teeth look whiter than new, new, new.
My teeth aren't new, but my toothpaste is new Pepsodent. Get with it, kids. New package, new flavor, new formula, too, means brighter smile for me and you.
You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. The new formula with IMP gets teeth much whiter. You can see it cleans the stains and film away while Irium fights tooth decay.
You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent.
The taste is new, so fresh and clean. That new taste really lasts. It's keen. And while it makes your smile a rave, it also makes your breath behave. So start going steady right away with Pepsodent. Get some today.
You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. Pepsodent. Pepsodent.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those Muslim old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how
live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
So Shaziz here, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, you can jump over there to the superchat.html on www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. Anyway, I put a few different things up on the website out there, so if you wander around, look around, you can find links to Zero Fossil Fuels, is a live stream video over there in the doggone it, where's it at? In the virtual lab section up there on the website. You can actually watch him do real-time experiments. I can't remember what he's working on. But I think yesterday I posted a video, one of his older videos, where he actually took a, built a coil, a dome-shaped coil, and showed some pretty interesting results in that particular video. I posted a couple fun videos over there in the chat room as well, on the Shaziz Radio side and the Wake Radio chat room side. One of them is old 1956 Pepsodent commercial. Pretty funny. And the other one, Crazy Russian Hacker, the guy, he goes out there and he airs up a doggone weather balloon to see if he can blow it up. Weather balloon's supposed to get like 40 feet in diameter. But then on a more mad science level, posted a link over there to a guy that's getting some FreeCycle batteries. FreeCycle is a website out there where people's got all kinds of stuff they're trying to get rid of, and they'll offer it away to free somebody, you know, or, you know, maybe trade some junk for junk or whatever. But he built a pretty decent battery bank off of that. It's pretty amazing that he said that it's been running for like 6 days. He's got quite a few amp hours out of this, I think he said it's a lithium battery pack. Rechargeable. Anyway, so with that said, there's a whole lot of different things out there that you could actually get probably next to nothing, or even free for that matter, that people want to throw away. I like repurposing old stuff. Here recently I've been working on trying to get about 10 microwave oven transformers, not for the old Tesla coil kind of research or anything like that, but to actually do some testing on raising voltage up and actually picking up waste energy off of other transformers. I actually did this yesterday. I probably need to do a video about it, where I took an old electric motor that came out of a, well, it's not really one of the older styles, one of the newer style induction type motors that doesn't have any magnets in there, or the rotor's actually pretty high-tech modern-day motor. Anyway, I took it and I wired some pretty good gauge, probably about 16 or 18 gauge multi-strand wire over the top of the actual primary, just to see if I could pick up some of that waste energy. And so I didn't even really count the turns. I just fit as much wire as I could in there and hooked it up to my voltmeter and hooked it to DC pulses and AC pulses as well, to see what kind of results I would get, and wasn't really getting a whole lot of on the DC side, but on the AC side, it was able to pick up probably about 1.0 volts, and it kind of fluctuated back and forth to 1.0 down to 0.90, and so anywhere from a volt to less than a volt. But then I got this idea, I said, trying to use like the magnetic ballast idea, I took and run a transformer in line with that 1.0 volts, which was able to actually step it up to about 1.3 volts. So off of the waste energy off of that fan, while the fan was running, I was actually picking up an extra 1.3 volts off of it, that was running a little electromagnet. And so with that said, I got an idea that I want to try with some transformers, to run a whole bunch of transformers in series, all the same gauge wire, and to see if that same concept would actually step it up every time you did it, or just basically stay the same. So it's one of the crazy ideas that I got going on. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick music break and try to get my head together here. So stay tuned. Peace and love, everybody.
with you?
Your teeth look whiter than new, new, new.
My teeth aren't new, but my toothpaste is new Pepsodent. Get with it, kids. New package, new flavor, new formula, too, means brighter smiles for me and you.
You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. The new formula with IMP gets teeth much whiter. You can see it cleans the stains and film away while Irium fights tooth decay. You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. The taste is new, so fresh and clean. That new taste really lasts. It's keen. And while it makes your smile a rave, it also makes your breath behave. So start going steady right away with Pepsodent. Get some today.
You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. Pepsodent. Pepsodent.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus, too. You wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. You know, that commercial was talking about some chemical that's inside there called Irium. I had no idea what the heck Irium even was, so I Googled it up. And it's actually got several different names. Let's see, one of them's other names, sodium monodiod, whatever the heck. I can't even pronounce it. I'll just throw the link to the Wikipedia article in there that everybody else can jump over there if they're interested and find out what was in that old toothpaste, man. You know, this world is, it's just driving me nuts. Everybody out there is running around, basically trying to prove evolution or something. Because if man evolved from monkeys, I'm thinking that some of the men out there need to catch up to become the men, you know, because all you see out there these days is people arguing and cussing each other out about every doggone subject under the sun, from politics to the religion and to science and everything. Man, I tell you what, since I started doing mad science, I have been called everything under the sun, and then some. And I just jump out there on different random videos, and I'll just watch as people interact with each other. It's a science project in itself to see how the human nature reacts. And when you see people come on there because they disagree with somebody and they'll just start cussing up and down a storm, telling people how stupid they are and all this kind of stuff, and then you step back and you look at the big picture with all the craziness going on in the world, and all these people want to sit around and they want to complain about what's wrong, you know, but nobody is out there doing anything. Okay, I say nobody, but I shouldn't paint with a wide brush because there are people out there trying to make a difference, but the majority of the people are too busy out there calling each other filthy names and trolling each other on YouTube and just putting all kinds of trash out there in the world, you know, throwing negativity to the wind as if it's you know, some good thing or whatever. And so when you look at that and you look about how hard you work on different things to try to give people information, and then they turn around and it just doesn't seem like it's appreciated anymore, you know, and it gets under your skin. It starts to wear you down to make you not want to even try. You know, they said that there was a need out there, that there was a problem with the climate. We had a man-made climate change, and we had to save the planet. You know, and there were people out there that had to save the trees. They had to save this and save that. And I talk about the ludicrousy of standing out there with a sign, a wooden stick with a paper sign, and protesting save the trees. When in reality, you should be over there trying to plant the trees. You know, something proactive instead of just sitting around complaining. But if there was ever a serious argument for evolution, you could find it on YouTube. You could find it on all the social media networks out there. Because if you've ever been to the zoo and you've watched a pack of monkeys acting like a fool because, you know, one of them maybe had a banana and the other one wanted a banana, and somebody else, you know, was upset about it, and two of them start fighting and they all start jumping around acting crazy. Well, that's looks just like what's going on out here. You know, people run around beating each other toothless and doing all kinds of craziness. And if you step back and you put the video of the monkeys fighting each other on one side, you put the videos of the humans fighting each other on the other side, you really can't tell a difference. So, if there ever was an argument for evolution, then that would be the case. You know, some folks just haven't caught up to evolution yet. You know, they haven't evolved. We're just sitting in the year 2016. It's Saturday, March 12th, 2016. And we got a vast array of technology out there. Amazing technology. That if people actually spent the time to put this stuff together, we could resolve so many different issues out there. They talk about they want clean fuel all the time. They talk about trying to get rid of carbon emissions out there. And the moment you get out there and you start talking about guys like Stan Myers driving his car on water, is the moment you get these idiots, these people that haven't evolved, you know, mentally to the stage that those who are free thinkers of the world have evolved to. They rush right out there and they tell you all the reasons why you can't run your car on hydrogen. Why it takes more energy to produce hydrogen than you're ever going to get real time in order to drive a car. Yet Stan Myers was doing it back in 1979. And other people have been doing it. And there's many different ways to get hydrogen to run things. Yet invariably, every single time you start trying to talk about the technology, you get idiots that come rushing to the front to tell you how stupid you are. Oh, this won't work, and that's that, and that's not free energy, and this is, you know, it's just, it's mind-boggling. It doesn't matter which technology you talk about, there's always somebody out there who knows more about you and more than you do about it, and they always want to argue with you about it. Instead of looking at the big picture, such as you show them an anomaly, and they say, well, you know, that's pretty interesting. Of course, you know, you couldn't run your house on it with that, but what if you put this and that together, and they started putting the pieces of the puzzle together, then you'd get some doggone things done. And then you got the younger so-called geniuses that always want to run out and start creating new higher-tech terminology that not even themselves can really understand what it is that they're saying, and want to argue with you over whether you're right or wrong, or whether there is or isn't such thing as whatever it is you're talking about. So, I guess here on the Mad Science Show, I'm kind of venting because I'm kind of frustrated because the whole doggone thing just doesn't make any sense. There's a community out there that's raising a ruckus because of the Fukushima radiation incident. You know, what's the governments of the world doing about it? If it's a life-threatening issue that's going to destroy the entire planet, what are the governments of the world doing about it? What are the people of the world doing about it? What are the doggone people doing about the BP oil spill? What's going on with that? Why? What's with all the crud that they've been pumping down there that corrects it? You know? What have they done? I guess I just ain't got no more room in my head to argue over stupid stuff. I don't have the patience. I just want to do some work and get some things accomplished and put some ideas on the table. And I just don't want to deal with idiots that want to argue or put stupid stuff out. So, let's see. I'm going to read a comment that just popped up in the chat room. Let me see what goes on here. It's too doggone long. Yeah. I tell you what, man. Got no patience for it all. When you want free energy and you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. We're surrounded with it. And we have the technology to put all this stuff together into clean, renewable energy devices that would function and run the inefficient junk that we've got today. Now, the easiest thing would be, literally, because of the way the system is just so messed up, is to reinvent the wheel. You know? When it comes down to how we use electricity for lighting and heating purposes, it would be so much easier to literally just up and reinvent the wheel. And that might very well be the direction I take my science into, is just to reinvent the doggone wheel and have my heating and my lighting running off of a completely different energy than what the normal power grid. Because with that said, it would be so much easier to tell the folks out there that want to continuously argue with you over how the system runs and tell you that you need this and this and that and that you can't defy this laws of physics or whatever. It'd be so much easier just to run whatever it is that I need to run on a completely different form of energy. You know, right now, pretty much everything you got requires a lot of current flow because of the way that it's designed. Doesn't mean that it couldn't run on something else. Such as I've seen tungsten element light bulbs run off of radio frequencies. There's no current to speak of there. it's just vibrating that tungsten at such a rapid rate that it literally produces heat, which heats up the element, and you get the light from it. So, in the lighting portion of the deal, it would be as simple as that, to just change from using tungsten. You could still use the tungsten. It would just change from using a resistive load to a non-resistive load to literally just vibrating the material until it lights up. The same concept could be applied in the heating portion of the deal. We've all seen how fluorescent bulbs work. We've all seen how argon gas reacts within a vacuum when you energize it with high voltage. We know that we can literally light up a fluorescent bulb wirelessly with the energy that is being transmitted. But you couldn't take that same energy without doing a few modifications to your receiver and ways to dump that back into moving it back towards the normal current that we actually use as we speak. But it could be done. But directly, that wave, you can't run an electric motor off of that wave that's coming out. It's the wrong frequency. There's not enough current flow. However, you're able to take that same frequency and produce a massive amount of heat in the plasma state. So, in heating and lighting, just those two right there, using your heating and lighting in a completely different form of electricity, then there's no arguing with everybody out there over the current form that everybody learns in electrician school or electrical engineers or whatever, because you're not going to play their game anymore. You're just going to take and use the known laws of physics that you know about, you use the basic science that you know about, and just use those particular deals over there. And if you ever want any of their kind of current, you can actually just kind of charge up some battery banks and then run some inverters on that side. So with that said, looks like Justin wants to join in. I'll give this a shot. So that'd be interesting. First I gotta find him. Okay. You're listening to Mad Science, which is fixing to get a little bit madder. Hello, Justin, you're live. Click, click, click. Say hi.
Audio options.
Say hi. You're live on air.
There we go. Now I can hear you. How's it going, everybody?
So, I read your, I didn't really read it all because it was like 10 miles long and I was trying to get something together. Would you like to explain that giant comment?
I could read it if you want first.
Alright, let's do that.
Alright, the Wardenclyffe Tower is an NNEMP. This is achieved by gearing down the very high frequency to extremely low frequency and ultra-low frequency ranges, provided wave propagation conditions in the cavity. Thus, could be achieved through the hood and cup. Non-nuclear electromagnetic pulse generators are non-lethal to human, but it is capable to destroy the economic infrastructures like industries, neutralized communications, surveillance, and targeting systems, and could upset or damage all electronics and whatever comes under its footprint. As a weapon, its role is important in low-intensity complex and military operations other than war. They are typically narrow-band devices, may either be short pulses, high peak power, or they may be high average power, operating at high repetitions rates, or in continuous waveform. If you need more okay, that's it, yeah.
Oh, okay, so basically, putting it in simple, what was you trying to tell everybody? Hello, Justin. Did we lose you? Well, like, apparently, I guess we lost him.
I muted myself by accident.
Oh, he muted himself. All right, so basically, in simple, what are you trying to say to everyone?
With Nikola Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower, if it was to be built and operational, every single device on Earth would have to be reformed. For instance, pacemakers. Men have pacemakers, and if an EMP was to go off, that man would die.
Well, see, here's the thing, man. Back during that day, people didn't have pacemakers. And so if the technology that was available back in that day with Nikola Tesla was taken advantage of back then, everything from that point on could literally be redesigned before there wouldn't be an issue today, because everything would be designed with those issues in mind. You see what I'm saying? So we've already missed that boat. This is why I don't subscribe to saying you're going to run your house off a Tesla coil. You're not. You're just simply not, because FCC's already got their claws into things now. So if you start to try to broadcast the electricity using a Tesla coil, you know, in general vicinity where you're at, it's not going to get any further than the range you're at unless you're pumping it into the ground at some pretty high frequencies. But regardless of that, that's neither here nor there. If you start going out, let's say a quarter mile to 5 mile range, and you're broadcasting out, now you got the jackbooted thugs from the FCC kicking your door down and hauling you off to jail. All right, so basically, if you take that same Tesla coil, you take that same technology, the same reactions that you got, and you use it in a completely different form and contained manner, such as inside of a plasma reactor, now you have the capabilities of literally harnessing the power of lightning in the sun in itself. You see what I'm saying? This is where my research moved from what Tesla was showing, which I still give him all the credit for, because he's the one that made me understand how frequency works and how to bait electrons from the earth. Now, if I'm going to use this energy and move it forward, I need to figure out a way by which I'm not going to radiate all kinds of energy out and waste it in the air, such as the breakout. This is why I always keep saying, you know, it's cool, it's a toy, it's, you know, these guys spitting these lightning bolts out. Yeah, it looks cool, and you know, you can kick it up to a couple hundred volts and get a couple thousands of more volts out of the top, but what are you doing with it? It's all completely wasted energy. Now, if you put that energy to use before it even breaks out, and you can actually tune it just like tuning your radio dial, then now you've got something worthwhile. In modern day, the Tesla coil is essentially, and I'm going to make a lot of enemies saying it, it's worthless.
It is worthless.
So, you know, I'm not trying to make the Tesla guys out there mad, but even with the Slayer exciter using a TIP 42C transistor and some diodes and a resistor and a couple coils, primary and the secondary, you know, it's sending out wireless energy. And they're trying to see how far that they can get the wireless energy. And they bring the voltage up, and they can get it to a pretty good distance, but they'll never get it very far, any farther than what they're doing right now, because that transistor is switching too fast. It's too doggone fast.
Well, that's exactly what I said. If you're to play with these Tesla coils and you want to actually transmit energy, you have to gear it down from high frequency to low frequency with great amplitude.
Yep. That's the difference between how much current flow you're going to actually have as opposed to how high the frequency is. Whenever you raise the frequency up. Stop it, I'm trying to add. Doggone it. When you raise the frequency up, you raise the voltage up. But in the same process, it's a give and take. You lose current flow because you don't have enough time to build up the amperage that you want.
You don't lose current flow. It dissipates into the air because they're not capturing all that high intensity.
You do lose it in the sense that you can't run a resistive load off of it. You still have the frequency range enough to vibrate the tungsten element to actually produce light. But as far as being able to run an electric motor on it, you can't. Not in that range. It's still energy. It's still the same amount of energy that you would have had if you were doing it the other way. You know, according to their own laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? It's still there. And just because you change the range of frequency doesn't mean you change the power that's available there. You see what I'm saying? Hello?
You're not changing anything. It's all about the time, how much time it takes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This radio silence is bad for radio, dude. Alright, so...
The Tesla coil, a modern Tesla coil, is worthless. But if you finish and complete it, it isn't worthless.
It is if you want to broadcast wireless energy.
Because the wireless energy
has already been taken by the telecommunications and radio and TV industry. It's done. The wireless energy is already being transmitted. Now, if you want to receive that energy, that's the easy part. All you gotta do is put you up a doggone antenna and start gathering up that doggone energy. See, everybody thinks that, you know, free energy ain't possible and the Tesla's dream never came to pass. But yeah, it did. Because if you look on every doggone street corner nowadays, you have either a Gwen tower or a doggone cell phone tower or a repeater system. Tesla's wireless energy is going on right now, right in front of your very eyes. You're just not using it to run your house. You see what I mean?
Well, that's the difference between telecommunications and actual energy that can be used.
You can use that same energy. That's what I'm saying, though. Just because it's only being used to do your cell phone... See, this is where I get so doggone mad. Is that everybody out there got it in their head that energy's not strong enough to do nothing. You know? And it is. You're just not using it the way that, you know, is best. You see what I mean? Right now we use a brute force magnetic field to induce a current in a coil wire to create another magnetic field that we're going to use to turn a rotor. Alright? So, sure, you're going to take a whole lot of doggone energy to put in there because of the way that it's designed in order to get that rotation. When in reality, all you need to do to get that rotation is to have those two fields be able to interact with one another.
Then they become electromagnetic, not just magnetic.
Well, it's the same thing, man.
Well, when it becomes electromagnetic, that means that it has momentum. Lorentz force.
Did Raymond ever make it into this call?
I don't believe so.
Alright, let me hang up on this call and see if I can call him back. Hello!
Hey, good morning, how's it going?
You didn't make it in there. Let me see if I can get Justin back in here. We're live on the air, by the way.
Okay.
Alright, so let me see here. I thought Justin was already in here. I don't know how in the heck I lost him, too. This Skype is obnoxious. Alright, so, how's it going there, brother?
It's going. Barely, but it's going.
Alright, let's see
what you get. What's the subject matter today?
Madness?
Madness? Yeah, there you go. I like that. That's why we call it mad science, right?
Yeah. Okay, did Justin pop back in there yet?
Not yet.
Alright, well, he'll be trying to call here before too long. Let me try this one more time here. I'm going to hang up on you for a second.
Sure.
Come on. Alright, now I think I got you both.
There, we got it.
Alright, so what we were trying to basically say, what I was saying, what I'm out there venting about, because I've been venting all morning. I just woke up on the bad side of the planet or something. I don't know. All these folks out there, you know, when we talk about wireless energy as far as Tesla going building a Wardenclyffe Tower, there's tons and tons and tons and tons of Wardenclyffe Towers all over this planet. They're called Gwen Towers, they're called Cell Towers, they're called Repeater Towers. They're everywhere. And they've been around for a long time. Some of them's a couple hundred feet tall. And so people are thinking, oh, well, you know, we could get wireless energy transferred. But you can't. You literally can't. The industry's already been taken. It's been monopolized by the telecommunication. Now, that energy that's coming off of there that can be picked up by your radio, it's not right at this point in time. It's not strong enough to run your doggone light bulb. You know, unless you're really close to that field, it ain't going to run your light bulb. However, if you take that energy and you use it for something other than what you're talking about, like running your house off of, and then transfer it into to a different amount of energy, it's more than enough energy to do what it is that you need to do. It's just a different type of energy. If the energy has the power to travel 5 miles and then bounce off another tower and go another 5 miles, then I'd say that's a pretty good strong signal, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know, just for the heck of it, I'd like everybody to know that there are 7 of those towers that you're talking about in less than a mile from my house.
Yeah. So 7 of those towers pumping out radio frequencies probably in the megahertz range. Now, what we were talking about earlier was the reason why that Slayer exciters can't go more than 25 feet. This is probably pretty close to as far as I've seen anybody get them, and that's really ramping it up with the voltage, 100 volts or more, is because that transistor is switching incredibly fast, too fast. And so you got a field expanding and collapsing so rapidly. It's the same exact reason why this energy that you can light up fluorescent light bulbs won't run your doggone toaster. Because it's expanding and collapsing so fast that you don't have enough time to build up any amperage or any wattage. It's just, all you're getting out of the whole deal is the frequency.
That's right, that's why you got to gear it down.
That's what I was trying to get to, was if you take that same radio frequency that's coming in there really fast, even a microwave, when it comes out of a microwave oven, is only a microwave for a short period of time. If I took a microwave completely out of its doggone shell. Now everybody's like, oh man, oh, you get microwaves, you're going to die, you know. And I put a glass of water about a foot away from that thing, right? Wouldn't heat that water up for nothing, all right? And so I had to scoot a little bit closer, probably about, I'd say, 6 inches away. Wouldn't heat it up at all. I got it about 2 inches away, and instantaneously, just like as if it was in your microwave, it was starting to heat up. Now see, when you got waveguides that are sending that microwave from the magnetron into the microwave oven, it's trapped in there. So it's going to stay in the microwave a whole lot longer because it's bouncing off the walls of the microwave and whatever's inside the microwave, it's bouncing off of it. And those microwaves are going through the water molecules in your food and causing the friction, which in turn creates the heat that cooks your food. So while it's in the microwave, it's a microwave. And if you notice, at the front door of the microwave, you got a little screen like a Faraday cage. And that breaks up the microwave in case any stray microwaves do make it out and you got your face right up to the doggone deal. You're not going to get, like, fried in the face. All right? But while the microwave, unless you've got some serious, serious power going on to where you can send that microwave miles down the road, it's perfectly harmless as long as you're a foot away from it. Now, with the radio towers out there, go buy any radio tower. And there should be a little sign down there warning, don't get too close to this because it's emitting microwaves. And if you do get too close to it, then you'll get burnt, just like as if you were in a microwave oven. It's that simple. But if you're 15 feet outside that doggone fence, you're perfectly safe. Because as those microwaves are coming out, they're bashing into atmosphere. Hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen in the air, and they're slowing it down.
And they're diluting.
Yeah.
Running out.
That's exactly the key. So, the same thing applies with the SWIR exciter. That frequency range that is coming is high enough to literally light up a fluorescent light bulb in midair is capable of energizing that light bulb at maybe 3 feet and turned it up a little bit, maybe 4 feet, maybe all the way out to 25 feet. But as the farther you get away from it, the weaker that signal gets because those waves are actually interacting with the atmosphere around it and slowing down. So, if you take that same doggone circuit, the same Tesla coil circuit, and you put it in, what, like I keep talking about, a plasma reactor kind of scenario, you can energize the gas in there, and you can use that energy, that high frequency, to energize that gas into the plasma state, and then take that energy away in the form of heat. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. I do.
That's all I've been trying to tell everybody all this time, and they want to, you know, give me a rash about current watts and amps. I don't care about current watts and amps, because when you're in a high frequency, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply in the least. You can take a 1.5-volt battery and get thousands of volts out of it. And it ain't because the battery has 1,000 volts in it. You see what I'm saying? When you take, if you got a magnetic ballast and you put your, take a 9-volt battery and take that magnetic ballast and put it on a 9-volt battery, positive and negative, keep your thumb on the wire, and raise and lower one. Every time you raise and lower one, when you put it down, it's going to create an electromagnet in that coil. When you release it, it's going to that field's going to collapse, sending energy out that wire, and it's going to shock the crud out of you. That's how it works. And the faster you do that, the higher the voltage rises. You see what I mean?
Yep.
But it's happening so rapidly, you don't have enough time to build up the current that you need to run the crap that we run. That's all I've been saying. Am I crazy? Apparently.
Yeah, I think you are.
I think I'm crazy too.
No, you're not crazy.
It's a simple understanding. Right now, there's 7,000 volts per line right in my general area. I don't know what it is in y'all's area, but in mine, I was told there were 7,000 volts running down each one of those lines. 7,000 volts, high voltage AC. Right? If I try to run anything in my house directly off of that power line, if I just throw a line up over the top of it, plug it into the wall, and hit the switch, the moment I do that, my whole house would burst into flames. Alright? Because that frequency is way too high. It'll burn up every doggone thing I got. Send lightning bolts all the way through my house, fry out everything.
The thing is, it's not just 7,000 volts. It's 7,000 volts at a lot of amperage.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of voltage.
Yep.
and it's way more amperage that I'm going to need. So, you know, with that said, you get the higher you get into the voltage range, you are going to start building up some amperage.
Yep.
It's as easy as that. But you couldn't run your house off a lightning bolt, direct.
It would be nice if we could.
Well, yeah. But there's ways to tap into that energy. You know, we tapped into the magnetism by figuring out ways that we could spin magnets past coils of wire and get current flow in wire and use that electricity. But before that, where did the electricity come from? They had static generators. They were doing all kinds of wild stuff. Some people thought they were wizards because they were able to get people's hair to stand up and shoot all these static charges out.
You know, something she said, what you said about the lightning bolt, I've been thinking about this for the past 6 or 8 months now. Everybody thinking that you need to capture the lightning bolt. No, that's ridiculous. That's a lot of electricity there. I mean, but you got to store it. Why the bolt? Why not just drain the electricity out of the clouds before it becomes a lightning bolt? It'd be a lot easier, a lot safer, and it could be stored for a short period of time.
Well, that's pretty much what the atmospheric group's doing.
Yes. I mean, you take a balloon and take a wire and run it up in the air, and all the static that electricity is building up in the clouds, well, eventually, it's like a capacitor. So eventually, it's going to blow, or you're going to have to drain it. So before it blows, let's drain a little bit off.
Well, there's a lot.
There is a thunderstorm, lightning storm, every minute of every day somewhere in the state of Florida. But let's build some lightning drainage stations there. A lot of them.
Well, I would love to see all kinds of different, when they talk about alternative energy, I wish just for one time, just once, put me up in front of Congress and the Senate to talk about alternative energy. They will never be the same the rest of their life when I'm done with them.
The thing is, they're not educated enough to even understand what you're talking about.
Look, I can talk down to their level. I know how to talk to a kindergartner. All right.
You would have to because that's about their educational level would be that of a kindergarten person, because these people don't know anything but law. They have no idea what you're talking about when it comes. You start talking about electricity, science, and free energy, and this, that, and other. They have no idea what you're talking about. You would have to talk to them on a child's level.
Well, that's easy enough.
No, it's not, because they would have to be willing to listen on that level. And they're so highly educated, they think they know everything. And we've already said, when you think you know everything, you're the stupidest person on the face of the earth. Because if you know everything, you can't learn anything new.
I wished I knew everything, because I've already had it all resolved, man. That's that, you know. My deal is I have an understanding mechanically how things work. Okay, well, when it comes down to manufacturing, my manufacturing skills leave a little bit to be desired. You know, I can make some things, but you definitely don't want me building your house if you want it to be perfectly straight.
There you go.
So I'm not a carpenter, you know, but I know some good woodworkers that can do magic with wood, man. And I've seen it.
You know, I'm wondering exactly what happened in London, England, during the Second World War, when they were flying all those blimps, and they were flying them on steel cables in order to keep the German fighters from flying over. In other words, they'd have to dodge all these cables. Weren't there some kind of electricity being collected in those cables? Because, I mean, after all, England is a very wet state, country, and there's a lot of moisture in the air.
Well, to answer your question, Raymond, go out and look at any radio tower. I don't care what one it is. They got what they call guide wires going down to the ground. They're not just guide wires. They're ground wires.
Yes, they are.
Because otherwise, you'd be continuously getting zapped anytime you came near that thing.
Yep. You know, I'm just wondering if there were incidences in flying those dirigibles that where somebody got shocked or killed or electrocuted or whatever. I'm just wondering.
Well, I'm sure that there's probably been quite a few people got zapped in the process of putting those things together. They probably have, OSHA has them grounded to something.
Really? It's a good thing OSHA didn't exist during the Second World War.
Because there is actually an equation out there that'll tell you how many feet off the ground for how many feet you go up. It raises up into hundreds of voltage all the way up into thousands of volts all the way up.
Yeah.
And higher the voltage gets, the higher the danger.
It doesn't have to be a lightning bolt either.
No.
You just take the static electricity that's building up. Static electricity, all it is electricity. It's not going anywhere. Okay? So, but you can transfer it from one to the other. Like you can transfer electricity from one battery to another. You can make a 12-volt battery charge up a 10-volt battery. And all of a sudden you got two batteries at 11 volts.
So you guys keep talking about how much water is in the air and how much it must be charged. So it's just positively charged water, ion.
Right.
Ionization of the water.
Right.
Well, essentially what's Justin.
It's overcharged and throws a lightning bolt. Why can't we take some of it out and just neutralize it? Neutralize the cloud so there is no lightning bolt. I mean, there's so much electricity in the air over the state of Florida, we can light up the entire United States.
The clouds act as a compressor, just like the Wimshurst machine. When two clouds come across each other, they have high values of salt content, which makes them conductive. Now they have a magnetic field that is around those clouds, and when they come across each other, those magnetic fields push on each other, compressing against each other, releasing of the electrical energy, the potential.
Well, what I'm seeing in there is probably a little bit different than what you're seeing in there, but regardless, every single, even if gas molecules, whatever, have different numbers of electrons, protons, neutrons, and they trade electrons. You know, electrons always want to go, they don't like each other. They want to go somewhere else. They want their own place. And so they're always moving around. And so with that said, when the evaporation process occurs, which you could duplicate exactly what is occurring with lightning in nature, you could build a system to where you could actually evaporate the water, send it up, let the radiation from the sun do exactly what it does, to dry it out, to send it up to the air in the form of water, moisture, vapor, whatever, till it finally gets up to the system where it condenses and gets cold and falls back down in condensation again. But what I believe is going on with the way that the evaporation system works is that when the sun's coming out, there's many different light spectrums. There's many different rays coming from the sun. Most of which you can't even see. Some of which you can see. Some that are dangerous, some that are not. Well, when the water comes out of the sky, drops on the ground, the bigger the surface area, the faster the evaporation's going to occur. The sun is heating that water up. It's breaking down the molecules into a gas. And when the gas gets up to a certain height, it's still being bombarded. It's literally separating the hydrogen and oxygen molecules from each other, separating the entire water molecule, and it's getting up at yet even higher. The smaller the molecule, the higher it's going to be up into the atmosphere. Once it gets up there, there's already ice crystals involved in the deal because the process has been going on for so long. Once it gets up there and it hits the cool air, that causes the water to flash back into the hydrogen and oxygen to recombine. As though the hydrogen and oxygen are recombining, then it actually produces a charge from that recombination of the hydrogen and oxygen. When that is going down through the clouds, it literally gets picked up by the ice crystals as well, who are already charged, and starts to build that charge up higher and higher. As this process keeps repeating itself, when the cloud gets high enough to literally ionize the path between the earth and the ground, all the hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen on the way up, the negative electrons of the earth now have a conductive path to shoot the lightning up to the top. So if you wanted to duplicate that entire system, you could make a multi-stage deal where you have water in the bottom and you're going to literally start to heat that water till it begins to evaporate. Once the water evaporates, you're still letting the sunlight come in because you want that same exact process to occur. Stage by stage, the water molecules are going to become less, smaller and smaller until they're literally separated into their two separate elements, hydrogen and oxygen. When that hydrogen and oxygen finally meets it up to the condenser stage up there where it is now recombining, and you have plates up there that will actually capture this energy as it's recombining, just like they do in the hydrogen fuel cell. When that water recombines, when the water molecule recombines and releases the energy, that energy will literally build up a charge on those plates until it finally gets to the point where it can start to bait electrons from the earth, and you could literally have a lightning bolt inside essentially a jar. You see what I'm saying? Nobody? Hello? Did you guys mute your mic?
Yeah, I did. I had to eat my coffee. I didn't want to disturb you. Yes, I agree with you. 110%.
So, you know, with that said, this whole climate change thing, the whole idea of carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, either one, getting up that high into the Earth's atmosphere is flat out ludicrous. You know, if you're at 10,000 feet, that's the highest you can go without supplemental oxygen. You get up to 30,000 feet and above, and the oxygen is so thin up there, if any at all, eventually you're going to die because you ain't got nothing to breathe. All right, so the process is breaking the water down before it ever even gets that high. You see what I mean? Once it does make it up there to 30,000 feet where the cloud layer's at or whatever, then that it's so cold up there that causes the condensation portion of it. That what's the word I'm looking for? Doggone it. Basically, I just said it earlier, condenser.
So we're talking about electrical potential in the atmosphere. Yes.
Well, yeah, that's what's happening. When the energy gets up there, and between the ice crystals crunching and smashing into each other and changing static charges, and the recombination of the hydrogen and the oxygen releasing their charge in the same cloud with ice crystals, it builds up a heck of a charge up there, a positive charge. The next thing you know, when that gets high enough...
Where's the positive charge coming from, right?
I just told you.
It's coming from the cosmic and the sun. Iron is negative. That's why magnets attract to it. Our core is negative. Our center is negative, right?
You know, the thing is, what you guys are talking about is getting free electricity from the air, but it would cost a lot of money to do it, and there again, it would be free. So if it's free, then the power company wouldn't make any money. So why don't the power company do just exactly what you're saying, but because they put out the money to build this apparatus, they can charge for the electricity. I mean, think about this a minute. The rocket assembly building at Cape Canaveral, or Cape Kennedy as they call it now, that building is so large. My father was an iron worker. He worked there and helped build that thing. And the inspectors would fly around inside the building with a helicopter and inspect it. And my father talked to one of the engineers that was in charge of putting the air conditioning in the building. And he said, why are you putting air conditioning in such a big building? That's going to cost a lot of money. He said, well, we have no choice. We have to. Because the building is so large that once we actually close it up, it will build its own atmosphere and we will have thunderstorms inside.
See, That's what I'm talking about, dude. Look, and it wouldn't cost a lot to make a smaller scale of it. You could probably build a 30-foot tower, like the old grain silos, you know. And you could actually have that when the sun's out to basically reproduce the whole process on how lightning is actually done.
Actually, if you get down to it and you know anything about construction and physics and math, the bigger you build a building, the less it costs per cubic foot inside. Think about that a minute. They could build a massive building. Oh, we can't do that. That's just too big to go big. Duh. Look at Hoover Dam. Look at the Panama Canal.
Stephen Gibbons posted
that. Look at when they were built, before the technology we have today. I mean, to do something that massive would be so easy. It would be unbelievable. I mean, you could build a building half the size of the state of Nevada.
Stephen Gibbons posted a comment in chat room. It said the geometric structure of the molecule is a result of the electromagnetic field of the atoms, nothing to do with salt. The condensing of water purifies it. There is no salt in the clouds unless lifted up by tornadoes or something similar. Which I have to agree with him, because whenever you evaporate water, you break everything down, and the heavier stuff stays down.
Well, that's how they make sea salt and sell it in stores. They take the seawater and evaporate the water off and leaves the salt.
Well, there's another deal about this thing. When they talk about how they got problems making water purification systems or whatever, you could make a water purification system that wouldn't even require any electricity whatsoever, because you got to do is evaporate it and then condense it and catch the condensed water back down on the other side, and now you got fresh water again.
Yep.
And if you built the system right, you know how hot it gets in your car in the middle of summertime, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can speed up that evaporation process. That's not a hard deal. And all you have to do is have the top colder than the bottom. And once it gets the colder than the bottom, what do you get? Condensation. Because of the temperature difference, it's going to cause the hydrogen and oxygen to reconnect. And in the process of reconnecting, guess what? You grab up a little bit of that little static charge that just got released, and you use it as energy. So you could not only build a system to purify the water, but to actually build up static charge as well, that you could then in turn move down into storage banks and use as usable electricity.
So what you're talking about is making electricity and fresh water at the same time.
Yeah.
Which would solve two of the most major crises of energy crisis on this earth.
You know, there's some places where it's drier than heck, but they have a humid climate.
Yeah.
And it just don't rain. It's just humid as heck all the time.
Yep.
So that would be a perfect place for this deal. If you wanted to get some water, I mean, if you get a dehumidifier and watch how this thing functions. Actually study how a dehumidifier works. Essentially, you know, it uses the heat difference, the hot air and the cool inside there, to literally cause things to condense. It takes those water molecules and condenses them, and then that little tray fills up, and after a while, if you don't empty that tray, it'll flood out on your floor.
Yep.
They've been making water purifiers forever and a day. You know? If you allow this thing to get all dirty and then try to drink that water, then you're going to have some nasty tasting water, because it's also because it's going to pick up dirt because of the static charge that's built up in the process of recombining that water. Now, didn't that just explain what we just explained?
Yep.
That static charge is built up inside that dehumidifier, whether you know it or not, is actually attracting dirt particles that are, you know, sticking to the plates on there. And that's why, after a while, that doggone thing will get cruddy-looking water in the bottom. Because as that water's falling down, it's washing the dirt with it. Ain't nothing to say that you couldn't put a decent filtration system on there to keep the dirt particles out. See what I mean?
What gets me is FEMA. Their response to disasters, I mean floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, and everybody knows the most important thing, other tending to the injured, other than that, the most important thing for the survivors is water. So here they go, trying to truck in all this water. Why doesn't FEMA have dehumidifiers that they can fly across country with a helicopter? I mean, big ones.
Well, yeah.
And they just, I mean, almost every major disaster involves some kind of water in the atmosphere. I mean, come on, why are you going to take 2 days to truck water across the United States when you can take about 6 or 7 hours in a helicopter?
Especially when you live in a humid climate.
Yes, exactly.
You know, if you're
talking humid climate, I'm talking tornadoes. They're always with rain.
Yeah.
Almost always. Hurricanes definitely almost always have rain. They have a lot of moisture in the air. And they take dehumidifiers and start sucking the moisture out of the air and let people drink the water.
Well, if you're living in California near the desert, you've got a humid climate.
Yes, you do.
Because out there in the desert, you're still close enough to the ocean to where you've got water that has evaporated in. You know, nothing is completely bone dry. If it is, it's pretty much dead. You know, it's dehydrated. Yes. But to say that you can't get water in the desert is just to not understand, you know, nature in itself, how things function. So, you know, one of the survival things, to prove a point, is that people out there in the desert, if you look hard enough, you'll find where they've done this before. Like, you're out in the desert, and you need water, and you can't get water. They trap a little bit of air inside a cup and put a plastic bag over the top of that cup, and they set it out in the sunlight. Well, when the sun's beating down on the top of that plastic and the wind from the ground is blowing across that cup, it creates the temperature difference that causes condensation inside there with that water. All right? Well, you can't get a lot out of it because of the way that you got it designed. Now, if you went over there every so often and you had a way to crack open that lid long enough to, you know, put some more oxygen inside there, put some more, you know, hydrogen and oxygen inside there, and kept repeating that process over and over, you'd fill that cup up. You see what I mean?
Yep.
That's
in fact, what you're talking about, I don't know if they still do have it or not, but your lifeboats aboard military ships, every one of them had an apparatus in it. Exactly what you're talking about. It was like an inner tube with a piece of plastic that would come up like a teepee, and you just put it out in the water, and as the sun would beat on it, the water would evaporate, collect on the sides of the plastic, and drain down to the edges of the inner tube, and those things would produce enough water to keep two men alive.
Yep, there you go, man. And if you're
old technology, old school technology here, why are we using that today?
And if you're in a frozen climate where you got access to snowpack and can't find no water, then I guess, you know, you got issues, man. You know, granted, you're going to have to melt a lot of snow to get a cup of water, but if you got tons and tons of snow around you, you definitely don't want to drink it straight.
For sure. For sure.
Anyway, the technology exists. I just get frustrated because everybody's want to spend time sitting around, throwing F-bombs like it's going out of style and acting like total buffoons and proving the evolution theory on a daily basis because, you know, some folks just haven't made it to the man state where, you know, they can have a common sense talk without, you know, cursing each other out or whatever. You know, it's rally the monkey time. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It drives me nuts because we got all the stuff we need, but yet there's always somebody got to come in there just to say, well, you can't do this because... Well, if you can't do this because, then what's the point?
Change the because.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, anything, and I mean anything, is totally and completely impossible. Everything is impossible if you do one thing, and that's remove all possibility.
Yep.
But however, you take anything that is impossible, and you inject one tiny possibility, it is no longer impossible. You just need to learn that how. You got to learn how to put that possibility into the impossible. Now, everybody thinks, oh, it's impossible, we can't have fresh water. No. Come on, man. They do it every day. Every day. In the hot summertime, you run your air conditioner. Well, outside, you've got your condensate line that is dripping fresh water on the ground all day long.
You know what? My wife came up with a brilliant idea for her gardening. She's put her garden right beside the side of the house, and we're going to use the air conditioner to water the plants.
Fantastic. Fantastic. You know, I've always said that Beverly is one smart cookie.
Yep.
She really is.
It's a brilliant idea. She said, can you make me some pipes that'll come over there and drain water in these off the air conditioner? Because our air conditioner, when it's running during the summertime, it produces a lot of water. You'll have a mud hole out back because it just puts out a lot of water. And it's not...
That doesn't even drip, does it? It's a steady stream of a pencil lead.
So... You know, it was her idea. She came up with it. So, basically, I'm proud of her for even, you know, coming up with that idea. Most people don't think like that. But, you know, if you're going to be running the air conditioner anyway, why not save you a few extra footsteps and water your doggone garden with it?
Yep.
So, hey, there you go, man. I'm going to fix her up a system for that. It'd be something as simple as using PVC plumbing. But, anyway... We got all the technology available to us, yet we still got the complaint department out there where people got to sit there and foul mouth heathen each other, you know, trying to make themselves appear to be smarter than they really are, when in reality they're not paying attention to nothing. I did the final video to the 1318 series and showed folks a code on there. And I had one individual come on there and say, well, that's just wrong and misleading. And I went back and I showed them a few things on the deal. Of course, I never got a response back because once you get one of these guys to the point where you just proved them wrong, they don't like it and they don't want to talk to you anymore.
They really don't, do they? They really don't. I had a very similar situation, especially with my two-stage oscillator. Some guy kept hounding me, demanding that I take all my videos down on the two-stage oscillator because I was duping people. And I told him, I said, well, prove to me. I mean, you don't have to do it. You tell me how to prove that it is not free energy. And I will do your experiment. And if so, I will admit to it. So he gave me an example to do, and I did it. And it could work the exact opposite of what he thought. It proved that the two-stage does regenerate more energy than he put into it. His theory of disproving it was absolute proof that it does produce more energy out than you put in.
Well, I put this 1318 series out to get people's mind to thinking outside the box, to understand.
I think I paused too long.
Huh?
I paused too long. And the thing is, I never heard from him again.
Oh, well, yeah. Anyway, I put this 1318 series out to show people something that was pretty doggone amazing. It's been in front of everybody's face forever and a day. I mean, there's calculators all over this place, man. That clock on the wall is a calculator that will count to infinity both forward and back, you know, forever. You can sit there and count. If you got the patience to sit there and count, you can count in the positive realm and in the negative realm in both directions, both forward and back. You can calculate up any geometrical shape known to man and so many different things that it's just mind-boggling. And so, you know, Tesla was talking about if you could figure out the magnificence of the 3, 6, and 9, that you'd have a key to the universe. Essentially, the key to the universe has been sitting on a doggone wall all along. But you know, people have to investigate that stuff for themselves. Most folks, they, you know, watch the first portion of it, and the moment they see anything, whether it be a shape or a sign or something that they disagree with, bam, they just discount the whole thing, run off, thumb you down, cuss you out, and leave, you know? And they just missed out on the biggest piece of the puzzle, which, in my mind, is flat out ridiculous. You know, they're cheating themselves out of knowledge when they're not willing to pay attention to people when they point stuff out. All these different anomalies that I keep talking about in all these different alternative energy devices that people are researching, the Bedini and Tesla coils and Van de Grasse and Wimshurst and Lord Kelvin device and all the different free energy devices out there, all have scientifically plausible anomalies that occur when these things are going on that are based off of actual basic science that don't defy any of the known laws of physics. Now, if you take each one of these by themselves, can you run your house off of static electricity? No, not by itself. You have to build some sort of deal to turn it back into the same kind of current that you're using to run your doggone junk right now. But it can be done. It with steam power. You couldn't run your car off of steam, you know? You couldn't run your house off of steam. You could steam the wallpaper off the wall with steam, but you ain't going to run your electricity with steam without the turbines and the generator head. Am I making any sense here?
Yep. Yes, you are.
Once you took that energy, which is the water, and turned it into steam, how many times did you say that water molecules expands once it's turned into steam?
1,600.
1,600 times its normal volume when it's expanded into steam. So that's a lot of pressure just got built up.
Yep.
And we can turn that into work. So what I'm saying with electricity isn't no difference than what they're doing with steam. I'm not doing anything different. It's just a different material and a different process. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, when I say things like the radio waves coming through the air is the same amount of energy as the steam power going on, think about this for a second. Think about the wave. If just around a little a Slayer exciter coil, you got a 3 or 4 foot wave around that you can light up a fluorescent light bulb, depending on how powerful, you know, how much voltage you're putting to that transistor.
You know, the thing is, you keep talking about steam, the expansion of water from a liquid to a gas, and how large it is. The thing is, a lot of people don't realize that it is not slow. A water molecule, when it reaches its point to convert from liquid to gas, it does not say, whoa, I need to get bigger. No, it does, bam, just like that. I mean, that one molecule.
That's the point I'm trying to get to. That magnetic field around that antenna, if you could actually take a pencil and trace out the diameter of that magnetic field, you would have pretty much the same expansion as you have steam, 1,600 times its normal deal of the actual wave itself. When the wave was created, like on a tiny little antenna, when you key up on your CB radio, that wave is maybe the diameter of that antenna. And then once you key down on it, hold that out, and that wave expands, you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
If you could actually trace out that diameter and trace out the diameter of how much steam, you'd pretty much have the same exact expansion. You just built up pressure. Anything that can create a wave that can actually send other waves out is pressure.
Yep.
So with high voltage is pressure. All I'm talking about doing is taking and using that process by taking the waves and sending them out. It's as simple as that.
What you're talking about is exactly how my old steam turbine works. That water molecule, one water molecule and a bunch of molecules of water, that one molecule expands into steam, and all of a sudden that pressure from that expansion is pushing the other water and causes the waves in the water. Now, if you put a vacuum on the water, you get it to boil at 55 degrees, 60 degrees. Now, if it boiling at that temperature, then you could put your hand on it and heat the water and cause it to boil from the heat of your hand. So, therefore, as the water boils, it creating waves in the water that's left. You just simply put magnets on corks and let them float and ride the waves.
Yep.
And let them make electricity. That's how the cold steam turbine works.
Well, all you need for electrical power to be generated is to have those fields north to south. Changing magnetic fields in a coil of wire is what produces electricity.
Exactly.
So if you can take a wave, if you could find the actual resonant frequency of an electron and take it either a step higher or a step below, just enough to rock it, not enough to tear it apart. Right? That changing field, as the field expands and collapses, will produce current flow. And so you could literally send a signal down the wire, not like electricity, not like normal electricity or how it functions. You could send a signal down the wire that would interact with that electron and cause that electron to interact with other electrons, which would increase the magnetic flux as it went down that wire. That should be easy enough to understand.
It should be.
You know, but it's I don't know how else to explain it. But you know, anytime you've got a wave, whether it be take a straw and blow against a marble, and you'll get that marble to move. It's wind to marble, but you get it to move because you got pressure built up. Well, the same thing is in electricity. You send a signal down that deal, you got a wave that's fluctuating, like a roller coaster, right past it. Any dipole molecule is going to rock, however slightly. You see what I mean?
Yep.
I showed an example to a friend of mine we were talking about alternative energy because he liked some of my experiments. And everybody out there can try it. You know, it's really so super simple. Put you a glass of water on a table and sit there and start tapping very lightly on that table. And just watch that glass of water. What you're going to see is a bunch of ripples in that water. It's going to start waves from the center point of that glass of water, and they're going to work their way out. And then if you sit there and stop for a second, you can watch as the waves pretty much collapse and the water levels itself back out.
Can I ask you a question? Did you say that backward? No. I think the waves would generate from the vibration in the glass, and the waves work toward the center, not from the center out.
No, they're actually coming from the center out. You can watch it in the glass.
Really?
Yeah, you can visually see it. They'll start from the center out. But anyway, you just have to try it to believe it. That's basically what I'm saying. But got the glass of water on your table. Do you got a coffee cup sitting right next to you right now?
Yes, I do.
All right, put the coffee cup on the table. Start tapping slowly and watch inside that coffee cup.
Coffee cup moving doesn't work good. Your cup of styrofoam is too light.
Oh. Well, then bang a little, just a little bit harder. It'll go through the styrofoam.
Okay, you're right.
Now, the frequency is going to be how fast you do it. You'll start seeing if you keep doing this long enough, and you get you get it just right to where those waves are coming out so rapidly, you'll slop that coffee right over the top of that deal. The only reason why those waves can't go out any farther is because of the edge of the glass. It's obvious. You got it contained. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
But
hey, I got an idea. I just recently bought some very strong electromagnets. They pull over 200 pounds. Now, they're DC, of course, and a transistor will take DC and make it pulsate, correct?
Yeah.
So why don't I hook up a battery to a transistor and hook that up to my electromagnet to get the frequency that I want, a little magnetic pull.
Yeah.
That work?
Have you ever seen those wave devices?
Yeah.
Where they put them out by the ocean, and as the paddle goes in and out, it causes it to generate power.
Yes.
Imagine if you could make a pool, and you could replicate that wave, kind of like Worlds of Fun did. They got their own wave machine.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. That's
insane.
Do you realize how much hydraulic pressure is in that slopping back and forth of the water?
A lot.
Now, all you'd have to do in order to initiate this deal, there's many different ways. You could do it mechanically, or you could actually do it electronically. You could get those waves electronically. Just by, like what you were doing, tapping on the table there, you see the waves coming in and out, right? The harder you tap, the faster you tap, the more that water gets agitated until it'll eventually work its way right over the top of the lid. All right? Well, that's how electricity works. That's how magnetism works. If you look at any magnet paper, everything seems to emanate from the center out. Everybody keeps talking about the toroid, but do they actually understand how a toroid even works? The vortex, what's going on there? When the permanent magnet's sitting there and you get to put your magnet paper on there, ironically enough, those flux lines, they always end up going right back to the center of the deal, right?
Yeah.
Well, when you hit your positive on your coil there, whatever you got, it don't matter either side. You got a coil wire, you got a positive and a negative. You got one connected and you kept there tapping it. The higher you tap that, the more the waves go, and the higher the voltage will rise up, the faster you tap it. You're raising the frequency the faster you tap it. And that's exactly what's going on in the water. If you could produce a system, whether it be an acoustic system or whatever, that would literally vibrate that water to cause those waves, hit the right bass signal, and you get those waves to start rocking back and forth. Once you get them rocking back and forth, it'll work just like your two-stage oscillator and start lifting more weight, because now you got that water and the hydraulic pressure behind it as it tries to level itself back out, pushing a paddle that is pushing a generator.
You know, there's a video on YouTube of a guy, he's got his little girl, looks like she's about 4 or 5 years old, and got her in one of those swimming pools, above ground swimming pools, and he's taking a floaty, and he's standing and got the floaty almost dead center, it's a round pool, and he pushes down on it, and of course the waves go out, and of course when they come back, he doesn't release it, he just releases the pressure, and it comes up higher than it was. Then when it starts to go down, he pushes down harder.
Yep.
And he keeps rocking back and forth, back to, until eventually he pushes about 25% of the water in that pool comes out all at one time.
Same process.
That's very interesting.
Well, look, man, in doggone automatic transmission, you think that hydraulic pressure ain't got power? They use hydraulic pressure in everything from cranes to bobcats to bulldozers to backhoes to track hoes, you name it. All hydraulics are in everything out there these days that have anything to do with power. You know, but in a doggone transmission, your transmission's not directly coupled to the drivetrain in the back. It's got actually a set of discs inside there that whenever you're sitting idle, the motor can sit there and spin freely and the car don't move. The car won't start moving until you spin it up faster to get the hydraulic pressure to literally cause the clutches to engage that will actually start to turn the wheels on that car. So, ain't nothing stopping you from literally using the same technology that's in the automatic transmission to literally start off spinning the liquid rapidly until you get up enough hydraulic pressure to literally overcome the torque necessary to turn a generator head. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I love hydraulics.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of pressure in there. There's a lot of power in hydraulics. But
actually, in hydraulics, as much as I know about it, and there's quite a bit, it still amazes me at how much power there is. I mean, how much power you can get out of something by hydraulics. It's unreal.
They take a process called mud jacking, where they take a positive displacement pump and they literally force, by pumping, they force concrete. And you know how thick concrete is?
Yep.
A forest concrete underneath the foundation of your house, which literally lifts your house and levels it back out.
Yep.
Hydraulic fracturing or the busting up the ground to get oil. You see what I'm saying?
I do that.
They do it. I mean, the technology's there, so there's no reason why we couldn't use all of these. And there's so many different potential that you could use all of these things that I've been talking about in order to produce clean, renewable energy. But every single time you open your mouth, some jackbone, jackbatty old freaky freakzoid comes rolling up out of the doggone wall like a roach and starts foul-mouthing you and telling you how stupid you are for even mentioning it. I told this one guy that there was a conversation about whether the Earth was flat and whether they'd been to space and whether or not we're underneath a dome, and I put this comment in here about putting a paint pen on the tip of a rocket, and if it goes up and leaves a splotch, then you know we're under a dome. If it doesn't, then, you know, shut up about it. Well, either way, somebody said something about, oh, we're not under a dome, you know, and I said, well, I couldn't care less whether we are under a dome or in a cornflakes box. I said, all these people standing around arguing over something so ignorant, you know, if you really feel like we're living in one, then get out there and do the research that it would take to literally prove it once and for all, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Don't sit around and speculate on the so-called laws of physics and what you've been told in a school book. You see what I mean?
Yep.
If you can't think for yourself, if you can't prove it for yourself, then there's no point even opening your mouth. You know? These folks that go out there and are continuously bashing religion because they don't believe. Well, you know, there's certain things that goes on in science that science can't explain. So it doesn't matter whether you're a believer or non-believer. Either way, it all boils down to everything in creation came from some point in time and space, and everybody just wants to know how it actually occurred. Whether it was divine creator or whether it was a big mistake. But regardless, it takes several things in order to start a fire. You have to have a fuel source. You have to have oxygen, and you have to have an ignition source. And so, with that said, who lit the match, or what lit the match? All right, none of which anybody was around to see, so they can't prove or disprove anything. So, with that said, why are they still wasting their time foul-mouthing one another when they can't even prove their own doggone theory?
I like that.
With science, with everything that we've got available to us, things that we know work because we see them, we bought them at the store, and they work, and some of them work better than they were probably intended to, and they end up getting taken off the market. But, like, for instance, I found these little bitty LED light bulbs that had built-in capacitors to them, and when you shut them off, they didn't shut off right away because the capacitor was still charged. And it was great for wireless energy because you could hit your Tesla coil and light these things up from several feet away and they would stay lit even after you shut the dang thing off. And so I was trying to find a bunch of them because I want to do this video called Tesla's Dream, where I make a whole little mini tower system, like little mini Wardenclyffe and a town that's all lit up by all these lights, you know, like one of those little train set towns that you see. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
You seem to be distracted.
My piezo crystals came in. Well, some of them. I ordered 10,000, and 6,000 of them came in, but they wrapped in boxes of 1,000 each, and they're starting to break apart, and I'm losing count here. So I'm putting them in Ziploc plastic bags, each 1,000.
Well, anyway, back to those bulbs. I haven't been able to find any of them to save my soul, man. They're gone. And I can't even remember where the heck I bought them at. So I'm going to get back out there on eBay and try to search up some to find them, because those are amazing little bulbs. They're super energy efficient. They put off really good light, and they actually stay running after you let them off because they actually have a built-in capacitor in them.
What kind of light bulb is that?
I just have to show you what they look like because it's kind of hard to explain, but it's a little nightlight bulb.
Really?
Yeah, and when you plugged it in and you shut it off, it didn't go off right away. It had a little capacitor that was charged up in the doggone thing, and it would stay running for a few seconds after you shut it off. It was pretty amazing. And so, anyway, I looked all over, tried to find them. I couldn't find them. But
what do you know what they're called?
Nightlight bulbs is all I know. LED nightlight bulbs. But the LED technology is like, it's incredible. You've showed examples of that, but we should already have our lighting systems would be completely resolved as far as, those things don't take near the energy that it takes to run everything else that we're running. So, now the heating system would be the next step to go. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if you can't get lighting in a worst case scenario, then you just don't know anything such as something simple as a candle.
Yeah.
You can build your own candles. So essentially, as long as that candle's burning, as far as I'm concerned, that's free energy. You got light and a little bit of extra heat, you know. And as long as you practice safety, you won't burn down your house in the process. But I have seen mechanical toys that you put candles to that will either produce steam to make a boat go, or there were these little carousels that whenever the heat was rising would cause the wheel to spin on there. There's all kinds of different examples of this out there, thermoelectric type of toys and stuff. But all of these anomalies, every single one of these anomalies out there, added together, taking everything you know that is possible right now, then we should already have it done. That's why I get frustrated, man. You can't tell somebody who just popped out of college these kind of things because they already got it in their mind. There's a set of rules and you can't go past the set of rules, and there's no use in even trying, and if you mention it, you're stupid. If you ask the question about NASA to the NASA groupies, such as what type of battery technology they were using and is there any schematics available to the average Joe where you could use it that was able to keep an astronaut on the moon for 2 hours or more, running the heating and the cooling and communications and a lighting system in that suit, boy, they'll come unglued on you, brother. Ain't no joke. Don't you talk about their NASA.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, I'm just saying. It's just, you see it all the time. It don't matter which social media you're listening to, go out there and watch. I suggest to everybody listening to this radio show, go out there and just observe. Observe what you're connected to, man. Go out there and watch how people interact with each other. The foul mouthing, the treating each other like trash, the thinking you know more than the average Joe. Crazy stuff. And ain't no reason arguing over God if you don't believe in God. Just walk away, man. You know, what's it hurting you for somebody else to believe in the tooth fairy or God? I believe in God, and I don't care who likes it or not. But I'm not going to sit around and argue with people over it. I'm not going to sit around and try to have a debate. You know, if they ask me something, I'm going to reply with science, such as, what created the Big Bang that they keep talking about? You know, who lit the match? You know, why is everything so perfect as far as the way that things are designed? The human hand. Look at all the functions of the human hand by itself. You know, it just goes on and on forever. And if you can't look at all that and be amazed, then I just don't know what to say to you. I mean, you could study the human body. Ryan Abrams did a deal with a Peltier element where he took a Peltier element and a little electric motor, and he made a little wristband thing and had the heat of his body literally causing the temperature difference in it to create the electricity to run that little electric motor, running off of the heat of his body. Who's to say you couldn't do one in a doggone hat, you know, and have a little fan running in your face there to keep a cool air? Heat rises, right?
Right.
So the heat off your forehead or off the top of your head would go up and heat that Peltier element, which would have a heat sink to the top of it, and basically run the power and would run a little electric fan to keep you cool. So,
you know, that's why I got all these piezo crystals. I'm going to fasten to the bottom of a rocking chair.
Yep.
And I'm going to get one of those things. It's not a baseball cap, but it's like a visor. In other words, there's no cap to it, just a visor. And fasten the LED lights that go on baseball caps. Put them there. That way you can sit in the dark, rock back and forth, and read your book.
Well, there you go, man. Necessity is the mother of invention, is what they say.
Yeah.
But we got technology out there that has been around since the 1800s and even further back than that. Electricity didn't just show up overnight. People been messing around with electricity ever since the first time somebody rubbed up against a bearskin fur, in their cave or whatever, and reached over and touched their woman on the end of the nose and gave her a shock. So it's been around. The world is a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. It has static energy in the air. It has wind power, solar power, hydroelectrics, thermoelectrics, you name it. It's there. And if you can't tap into all that, then you don't want to. You don't need to. That's it. Live in a mud hut. Throw your TV out, burn down your house, and go live in a mud hut. That's the easiest way to do it. And you don't got to worry about it. What do you think?
Seashes like you.
Well, my only issue about living in a mud hut during the dry season, you'd end up with dirt in your hair and dirt in your face. And I don't want dirt in my hair and my face. So I kind of like living in my house. I want to keep electricity. And what I want to do is make it so that electricity is free. Period. And if I can do it for myself, then everybody else out there can do it. You sure making a lot of racket, man, with your piezoelectrics.
That's because I got a lot of them. I still got 4,000 more coming.
Man.
What you do without this many?
So, once you get your piezoelectric granny chair together, you going to run it into a battery bank and keep your little TV going so you can watch the football game?
Actually, I was thinking about making 4 or 5 rocking chairs so that the family could sit around and actually generate enough electricity to run 25-inch colored holdings up.
Cool.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yep. And that same process you could probably use for the kids when they're flagging the door running in and out.
Uh-huh. I was thinking about the 2-stage oscillator is the pivot point of the pendulum for each eighth of an inch it moves. You multiply the lost energy by 1.7, not by 1. In other words, if you lose, say for example, 1 point of energy at 1/8 of an inch, you're going to lose 2.7 points of energy if you move it 2/8 of an inch or 1/4 of an inch. Now, with the piezo crystals, the movement is so finite in order to produce electricity that I don't, the pivot point of the pendulum is not going to have to move hardly at all. So I'm not going to lose hardly any energy, yet I'm going to make a lot of electricity because it takes less than 1 pound of force on a piezo crystal to produce a bolt of energy. A bolt of that electricity.
Alright, now how about I throw another monkey wrench in your machine?
Alright.
Alright, now you know that they use piezoelectric crystals for speakers, right?
Right.
Well, we already talked about the expansion and collapsing of the magnetic field. Now imagine, you need to try to run this on a voltmeter just to see whether or not it's plausible. If you take two of those piezo crystals and you hook one of them up to a power source and you vibrate that doggone thing, and when you pull the power source off, see whether or not there is any actual voltage that is released, just the same way that that it would be if you were tapping on a coil of wire. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you hit the power on, it should buzz the coil. Or not the coil, it should buzz the crystal speaker.
Right.
When you pull the power off, there should be a momentary collapse of the field inside that crystal, which should push out some more energy.
There is no should. Should is, it is what you're saying. The thing about a piezo crystal is if you bend it one way, it makes electricity. But when you release it, it bends back to its original shape. It makes electricity in just in the opposite direction.
Yeah, well, when you add voltage to it, you're actually creating pressure inside that.
Right? Yes, yes.
And so by releasing that pressure is basically like going the opposite direction. So
exactly.
You should be able to pulse those piezo crystals and actually get a rebound from that when it shuts itself off.
You said it. I was looking for the word rebound, and you will get a rebound. Yes, absolutely.
Because everything in nature balances itself out. Once you create a magnetic field, nature will create an opposing magnetic field that will balance that back out. That's
yes.
Called Lenz's law. All right, well, so you know that when you slop the water in the pool and you sit there and watch as those waves go back and forth, eventually those waves will stop as gravity and nature balances itself back out to a level deal. It's
exactly.
That slopping effect that you want to use to get your energy from. You see what I mean?
Yep, I see exactly what you're talking about.
Water always finds its level. Electricity always finds its level. Any force of nature out there will always find its level. When you disrupt nature, and you disrupt it strong enough, you get a tornado. When hot and cold mix and create a stirring effect, it will basically start to spin that air and basically create a tornado. After a while, nature will level it back out and the tornado will disappear because the air and everything is back to normal again. See what I mean?
Yep. 100%.
So, if you duplicate what nature has already done, you literally have the capability of creating a tornado. All you got to do is have hot air and cold air mix. When the two combine, hot air coming from this direction, cold air coming from that direction, now you get the spin. You get a 300 mile an hour wind inside a doggone closed in chamber, you got some torque.
A lot of it.
So, a lot of it. Look at how the doggone turbos on the cars work, man. They're incredible. They're actually reusing heat off the exhaust to turn a turbine, which on the other side of that turbine is taking the same momentum off that turbine and sucking cool air in from the outside and compressing it, then turning that, then they got to take the cool of that compressed air that they just compressed back down through an air cooling system and then ram that cool air down inside the intake, which causes it to have an extra amount of oxygen to breathe and produces a lot of power. Those turbos are amazing, man. So, knowing that you can do that in a car, it's already technology proven. You know, there's a tornado in a box, man.
Really?
That's what it is. It's taking hot air off the exhaust, spinning the turbine, sucking cold air in the other side, actually compressing that air and getting it hot, and then shoving it into the doggone intake to feed your force feed your doggone engine a whole lot of PSI and oxygen. It's basically like a nitro boost, man.
Right.
You shove a whole bunch of nitrous oxide down inside that deal, and now your fuel is like leaner than mean.
Uh-huh.
So, tell me, we got all this technology thus far. and we can't literally get together and build a alternative energy device, and if you don't want to call it free energy because it costs you to buy, build it, then okay, whatever. Once it's paid for, you ain't paying for it anymore, then as far as I'm concerned, it's free energy.
All
right?
It's all about semantics.
Yeah, if you didn't have to pay for none of the resources, and all you had to do is take this piece and that rock and this over here and put them together, and now you got all the electricity you want, such as like a crystal battery. You could take a bunch of junk that you know and chemicals, put them together. If you could get all these chemicals yourself, gather them up yourself, and then turn around and be able to generate all the electricity you wanted, you would prove free energy to yourself. You know? But I had to actually do some physical work to get over there to do
right,
that.
Right, right, right. You know when you got your naysayers.
Yeah, boo-hoo for you, man. God, you gotta get up off the couch to get your free electricity. That's so sad. But in the meantime, you're on YouTube and Google telling everybody we gotta save the planet. Planet's
right.
Doomed. It's doomed because the fat, twink-eating slob is sitting there complaining on YouTube, being a keyboard warrior, giving everybody the virtual middle finger and cussing them out instead of getting out and doing something. Is that rude of me to say?
No, it is not rude.
I was trying to say, man, look, it's all there. You know, and I ain't selling these ideas, no, but I'm just telling them, look, pointing it out, there it is, look at that, try that with that, you know, hey, that's it. A lot of things that I do inside my lab, you know, if somebody says something can't work, I don't pay attention to them, you know, I'll go and prove to myself why it can or can't work. I will get out there and I actually, you know, get things together and I'll overpower them just to see what would happen. If I burn it up, I burn it up. It's a shame. But if I find an anomaly in there, I'll share it with somebody. Like yeah. Lighting up a doggone full strand of 120 volt AC LED strand that you normally plug in the wall, lighting it up with a hard drive motor. Yeah, that's 120 volts that it took to do that, right? Plugged it in the wall, it took 120 volts AC.
No, it didn't.
But then I turn around and put it on a hard drive motor, which hardly has any copper wire in it, and it has a really cruddy magnet in it. But yet, if you spin those RPMs up, you can still light those light bulbs up.
Yep. Well, you remember what I did? I took your idea, expanded on it just a little bit, and lit up 15 T8 fluorescent light bulbs with less than 10% of the electricity that's normally required.
Yeah.
By using high voltage instead of amperage.
And I love that video, man.
15 fluorescent light bulbs that normally require 28 watts each. And I lit them with 3.4 watts each. And lit them up like daylight.
Well, all I can say is that if you wonder why I call it mad science, it's because all the times you go out there and you listen to everybody hollering about there's a need for this and there's a need for that, and you point out the solution, and then they come right back to you and say, oh, well, you just never give no solutions. You always talking y'all, and you never do nothing. I put it out there, man. I showed you everything that I can find. And then some.
Yeah.
You know, plasma. Seriously, look into plasma. I'm not talking the Keshi version of plasma, the hoodoo voodoo. You gotta love your reactor. If you're a jerk, you don't get no free electricity like the soup Nazi. No, I'm talking about doggone plasma, where you energize gas into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma. It gets hot in there. Hot. Heat. Hot. All right. Heat's normally your worst enemy when it comes to electronics. It's normally your worst enemy when it comes to electrical devices. But heat can be used for lots of things. And heat is one of the things that costs you a lot whenever you're running your electric bill. And if you can produce enough heat off of a doggone 12-volt battery energizing gas into the fourth state of matter and then taking that heat away via tubing that you're running hot water through, then you're running your heater off of a 12-volt battery instead of 120 volts or 220 volts AC. It's a no-brainer, man. But I'm a jerk. It's all right. I can deal with it. I can hang. I'm not going to shave my head bald and go out to the airport and wear a robe and play a tambourine.
There you go.
I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
When you get ready to do that, you let me know because I'm bringing the camera.
No, I ain't doing it.
Oh, Lord.
I'm saying I'm going to keep the mad science hair. I'm going to keep plugging right along, and I will stumble into something that, you know, I stumbled in a bunch of other things. Those X13 motors, the direct drive motors, the washing machine motor, not washing machine, the hard drive motors, the washing machine pump motors, every single AC or DC electrical motor. All these can be turned into generators, right? And if everybody keeps on saying the same doggone thing, well, you know, you can't run your house off of a hard drive motor. You just can't generate enough current. They just don't simply get it, man.
No, they don't. They don't get it. Everybody thinks for some reason, not everybody, but a lot of people, think for some reason that if you want to build something that's going to make electricity, you ought to power my house. Well, no. It might power two or three light bulbs, but then why not build a couple more?
Yeah, power a couple more light bulbs.
Yeah. I mean, everybody says, Raymond, why do you do everything so big? Because people expect it, and I can.
And if things could be scaled up, they can be scaled down and vice versa. You could literally design it to your own energy needs yourself. And then the fact that the voltage is too doggone high and the current and amperage is too doggone low to run your doggone electric motor, then take that high voltage, turn it into heat, and actually generate the current and watts that you need on the other side of the gizmo with that heat and turn it back into battery power that you can run inverters to run the crud that you're wanting to run. You see what I'm saying? Just because it's too, it doesn't mean it's wasted because it's too high to run whatever. It just means that it's moving so rapidly that it don't have time to build up the amperage. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But even in high voltage, the higher the voltage goes, up into the voltage that a lightning bolt has, the amperage is coming with it eventually. It's just trying to catch up. So,
you know, I haven't worked on the two-stage oscillator in a long time, the big one. And the thing is, I was putting in less than 20 inch-pounds of energy, and it was putting out over 900 inch-pounds of energy.
All right, let me ask you a question on that, because yes. I just said something crazy that everybody sure probably wants to fight with me about, because I said that eventually the amperage is going to catch up the higher the voltage goes.
Right.
Now, that two-stage oscillator, I've watched you sit there and move it with your finger, right?
Right.
And once you get it going, you're raising, what, like 80 pounds on the other side?
90 pounds, 5 inches.
90 pounds, 5 inches off the ground. Now, right. You're just using the finger just to show how easy it is. What would happen if you grabbed a hold of that with both hands and just kept ramming the heck out of it? Just ramming the heck out of it.
It would tear itself apart.
Yeah! That's my point exactly.
It's made of solid steel. It weighs over 5,000 pounds, and it would tear itself apart.
That thing would literally explode itself because the energy that you put into that, you know, you just keep ramping it up faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until finally it just couldn't take it anymore. That thing's coming apart at the seams, and I have to be standing on the other side.
Here's the thing. If you fasten it down, it pulls with 180 pounds of force. That's why I have it weighing at 90 pounds, picking up 90 pounds. Because it's coming up with 90 pounds of excess force. It will lift that 90-pound bar and apply a 90-pound pressure to a chain turning the generator. Now, when it drops with a 90-pound force. So what you're doing is you get 90 pounds of energy moving 5 inches in both directions, which is 900 inch-pounds. I'm applying less than 20 inch-pounds, less than 10 pounds per inch, and I'm moving 2 inches with my thumbs.
Anybody thinks that anomaly that I just mentioned wouldn't work? Go out there and find you a 5-pound weight. You know, it don't even have to be 5 pound. Just put any. I don't care, 0.5 pound, 0.25 pound, 5 pound, whatever. Just put you a 5 pound weight in some odd place on the wheel of your car. All right, and then go drive down the road. Drive as fast as you possibly can. I guarantee you, the faster you get going and the stronger that vibration comes into that car, it's going to rip that car apart. It's going to rip that wheel right off the doggone axle.
Yes, it will.
Ain't no joke.
Whatsoever.
You can start off slow. Start off slow, work your way up, and if you can hang on to your teeth long enough, and you can hang on to that deal, and that tire will hold out throughout all that ripping back and forth, and you'll see what the heck it is I'm saying. You're going for a ride, brother. Get that puppy up to 100 miles an hour, and if you can hang on to it, you better join the rodeo.
Really? You put that one in the right context.
That's right. You can hang on to the bull for dear life, because if you can hang on to the car with that thing all set like that, that's the reason why everything has to be precision, because if it ain't, it'll vibrate itself apart. Plain and simple.
Yes.
It has to be smooth. It has to be, balanced. If it ain't balanced, ask any mechanic out there, what happens if you take the harmonic balancer off of your car and drive it? How long do you think your car is going to last? You know?
About 15, 20 miles, maybe.
Yeah, that engine will vibrate itself toothless, man. There'll be parts flying in all different directions.
You take your harmonic balancer and make it off balance 1 ounce, and in about 2 hours of just sitting idling, it will destroy itself.
Yeah, I had a blooper one time where I had a harmonic balancer that I accidentally damaged a bit, and it was enough that it tore the doggone motor off, man.
Yep.
It just vibrated all the crud, and I figured, well, I can get a few more miles out of this. No, that's it. See, now that kind of force is the same kind of force that I'm talking about, where you're just tapping on the table, and literally, you try this experiment. Go on your kitchen table, put your glass down, and put you some water in that glass, and have somebody look inside that glass, or have somebody over there go over there and tap on something, anything, in any room. I don't care where it is. If they're tapping hard enough in the living room, that doggone glass is going to vibrate. You'll watch that doggone water in there start to resonate. And the faster they do it, the more those ripples will go out. All right? That's how energy travels, through waves. And you can sit there on one side of the table and tap out one frequency, and then you can tap on the other side of the table and produce another frequency. Well, you'll get that water inside that thing slopping around and end up producing a vortex in the center of that water, because you got two opposing frequencies fighting with each other. That's how it works. And just as much energy's coming out of doggone radio waves, just as much energy's coming out of your doggone wall socket. You know, you can believe it or not, but before it's all said and done, I'm going to prove exactly what I'm saying. You know, it's just a different form of energy. That's all there is to it. Steam, electricity, they got a lot in common. They travel in waves, man. It expands out. And if you trap it in, you get pressure buildup. Because you keep putting that pressure to it, it keeps building up. It's blowing up the balloon until it pops in your face. You see what I mean? Are you still there, Raymond?
Yeah, I got my microwave going. I didn't want to bother anybody.
Oh, well, I
give can you
the,
hear?
Yeah, give the analogy of a blowing up the balloon until it blows up in your face. Overcharge right. A capacitor, overcharge a battery. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Actually, gets right down to it. You can overdo anything.
Yeah.
Anything. I mean, think about it. Arsenic. I'm taking heart medicine. It has arsenic in it. A little bit do a little bit of good, so why don't I just drink a couple pounds of this stuff? Does a whole lot do a whole lot of good? Nope.
No, you'd be croaked.
You build a little machine, makes a little bit of electricity. You build a big machine, makes a lot of electricity. But it's a big machine. You're not trying to get a lot of electricity out of a little bitty machine.
Well, go watch my video called Unsubscribe. Pay real close attention to what's going on in that video. You'll see three huge capacitors that they use in car stereo systems to supplement the doggone alternator so that you don't run the battery down while you're blasting your eardrums out with your loud old stereo. And you'll see what it is that I'm talking about. You can trickle charge those things to fully charge because the voltage is pressure. You can continuously put voltage to it and the pressure is going to continue to grow and grow until those things are charged up. You can bring energy in from all different directions, solar, wind, whatever. It doesn't matter. You can bring it in and charge the same doggone deal and that pressure will eventually fill up that chamber inside those capacitors. Once those capacitors are fully charged, all those other systems will stay running below it because they're smaller, they got smaller capacitors, they are smaller load, and they will stay running as long as those large ones never get fully empty. You can keep it a quarter to a halfway full at all times and never let it go dry, then the rest of that down the line is going to stay running. So what I'm saying is you could capture all these energy, radio waves, there's so many different frequencies out there that ain't even remotely funny. You static electricity, solar power, and as long as you keep that tank filled up, then you ain't never going to run out of it. Imagine if you had a propane well next to your propane tank, and your propane tank never went dry. You can run your doggone house forever. You see what I mean?
100%.
Yeah, natural gas well. If you own a natural gas well and you're paying for natural gas, there's a problem with that.
What about all the people in the United States that have septic tanks?
Yeah.
Those septic tanks are steadily, 24 hours a day, producing...
Nothing!
Yeah. They're letting it all go in the atmosphere.
Yeah, that stuff that stinks... Well, that's not the methane itself.
Exactly, because methane has no odor.
Yeah, but that methane is flammable. You can burn it. So turn your poo stew into a doggone stove. Oh, man. And the compost pile, you know, that Muddy was talking about where you heat up water because when things rot, they release heat. Why is that, man?
You know, in Norfolk, Virginia, many years ago, they built a methane gas digester. And in a matter of months, they converted, it cost them $7 million, but they converted all city vehicles to burn methane gas. Well, that went really good, and they saved a lot of money. For several years. And then all of a sudden, they closed the plant down. The excuse was that methane gas was too corrosive and the upkeep cost too much money. Now, if that were the case, what happens when they put methane gas in the city gas lines, go into people's homes in steel pipe that lasted 40 and 50 years? No, there was corruption there. Somebody, son-in-law, or son, or grandson, owned some kind of a gas company or whatever, and so they just closed the plants down to nepotism, to look out for their friends for money.
That's the sad part of industry, man.
That was the excuse they used. They're educated people. Very educated, but they're stupid. When it comes to, I mean, I don't mean ignorant, I mean stupid. When it comes to science, they use an excuse so blatantly lie, just a pure out-and-out lie, that the gas was so corrosive that the upkeep of the plant to replace the pipes ever so often, this is bullcrap. Methane gas is not corrosive. My God, they compress it to a liquid, put it in huge containers, put it on ships, and ship it across the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. Come on, people. Wise up. Your politicians are lying to you so that they can make more money for their families. Duh. Come on, man. But don't get me started on that, please.
Well, anyway, it's out there, man. It's all these different technologies that we're talking about. You waste energy everywhere. You know, I was talking earlier about I took a little electric motor out of the back of one of the modern day microwaves, one of those little induction motors that have the weird aluminum / metal rotor in it that also only has just a little copper deal, which would normally be like the secondary of the electric motor. You got a primary on there. I took and wrapped a bunch of wire. I think it's about 16 gauge or maybe a little bit less. I don't know. Either way, I wrapped it. I didn't even count the turns. I just wrapped it around as many turns as I could get evenly on there. There's about two layers of that wire. And as I was running the electric motor, I was measuring the voltage off of it, and I was getting a steady 1.0 volt to about 9.9 volts on there. And it was an AC round. Well, I couldn't get it to go any higher than that. But either way, it was waste energy off of it. Then I took a coil and I ran it in series with it. And doggone it if I didn't raise that thing up to 1.3 volts AC. Now keep in mind, there was only a certain number of turns on that, over the top of that primary on that motor that I put on there. Now, if you had exactly the same amount of turns that that motor actually has that is running the motor itself, and be able to generate more current flow, I'm 100% positive you could get a whole lot more voltage just off the waste energy that is occurring when you're running that electric motor. What do you think?
I think you're right.
So, if you're going to be running the fan anyway, you might as well run a light bulb with it too.
What?
Under its, you know, you're not. It's not actually coming off the grid. It's a, it's only the waste energy that's coming off of the transformer that's actually running the motor.
You know, you said something a minute ago about how just throwing that energy away. And I want to go back to Beverly's idea of using the water from the outside of the air conditioning. I think that's a fantastic idea. Now, let's carry it one step further and use the heat off the backside of your air conditioning to make electricity to offset the amount of electricity the air conditioner is actually using.
Yep.
I mean, that's where the cold steam turbine comes in. That's where the Stirling engine comes in. There's more than enough heat coming off the backside of your air conditioner to run a Stirling engine to produce at least minimum of 25% of the electricity that the air conditioner is actually using. And if you put that back into the air conditioner, then duh, you've cut your air conditioning electric bill by 25% or 30%. I mean, you could use the heat in a cold steam turbine. Well, now, just like an air conditioner, you got to get rid of that heat, so you put a fan on it. Well, no, you don't. You put your coils inside of a container, fill it with mineral oil, because mineral oil boils, doesn't boil until it hits 600 degrees. So now you take the mineral oil, it gets hot, and you pump it over to a cold steam turbine, make electricity. Well, you've got to get rid of that heat in the cold steam turbine. So now you put a Stirling engine on top of that. All you're doing, you're not creating energy. You are doing the third law of the conservation of energy. You are moving energy from one point to another.
Yep, that's what I've been saying forever and a day. We're not talking about defying any laws of physics. We're just talking about using the laws of physics to our advantage.
to it, yes, to your advantage. And that is a big advantage.
You know,
because in reality, you could use the heat if you move it enough times. You can move the heat and reduce your air conditioning bill by 50% to 60%.
Heat in the internal combustion motor is internal combustion engine is normally an unwanted deal. You need a tiny bit of heat down inside the pistons, but you don't need that heat on the motor itself.
That's exactly right. So you heat water, you put it in a radiator, and you put a fan on it to cool it. Why are you doing that? Why don't you run the water through a container with Peltier devices on it?
Yep.
Turn that heat into electricity. I mean, you're going to have to cool the water anyway. Well, let the heat go through the Peltier device, cool it on the other side, and you make electricity.
Well, with that process, you could actually build you an electric car that would run off of heat.
Yes.
So essentially, you could burn a wood, you know, piece of firewood, and produce electricity.
Yes, you could. You very easily could.
Yeah, some clean burning charcoal or something. Oh man, you know. And as you're driving down the road, there's your temperature difference because the outside air is cooler than, you know, where the Peltier. So there's your generating portion. So. What do you think?
I think I'm on to something. I just ordered 200 Peltier devices, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to experiment with gas internal combustion engines and use the heat to generate the electricity.
Let's
explain that 1 horsepower is 743 watts. I say wrong. They're right in that the horsepower itself. But they're wrong in that if 1 horsepower motor can only produce that much electricity, because I'm going to take 1 horsepower. Well, I've got a 2 horsepower motor. It's never been used, never even been fired up, and that's what I'm going to use for my experiments.
There's a comment in the chat room for you. Stephen Gimmons said one for Raymond. A further development supercharger increasing the manifold pressure to 25 pounds. And the use of 150 octane fuel increased the top speed of a Spitfire MK. I don't know if that's like six times or whatever. I don't know. That's Roman numerals, 1X, whatever that is. By more than 30 miles per hour or 50 kilometers per hour in 1944, 150 octane fuel was used. As water injection was fitted on Merlin, and that gave the output of 2,640 horsepower at 36 pounds manifold pressure. He's actually got a link down there too. It's the secret of the Spitfire.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, Henry Ford driving around in one of his old cars getting over 100 miles to the gallon of gas back in the day, and yet we can't do that today.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Can't or don't want to.
Well, I'm saying it's more like the whole don't want to thing, man, because I literally believe that it is fully possible to literally build a indestructible internal combustion engine.
You know,
Get that thing too hot, and you never develop enough friction in the bearings to destroy it, if that system is so perfectly engineered to where you're vaporizing the fuel and you're getting the best out of it, number one, you ain't got nothing to break down, because everything is being self-maintained by keeping the heat away from where the heat doesn't need to be, and using that heat to literally help the thing run even better. The supercharger to take that heat off of that engine and pump it right back down to shoving cold, fresh oxygen down into the intake and giving it more horsepower.
You know, back years ago, in the I'd say mid to late 60s is when they first started coming out with usable computers, and I mean, it was almost instantaneous. As soon as the internet came up and they had encyclopedias on the internet, everybody started just getting rid in yard sales of their old the encyclopedia sets in the Encyclopedia Britannica. I used to buy them up, the old ones. I mean, like in the mid-40s, late-40s, early-50s. And I read in the Encyclopedia Britannica that the BTUs of energy in 1 gallon of gasoline used properly could propel a modern-day automobile, of course, at that time, at 55 miles an hour for 360 miles.
And I ain't doubting it in the least. But the way that they got these modern-day injectors and the way everything's set up, it's so doggone efficient that the motors these days, don't get me wrong, there's some really, really impressive high-torque, high-speed motors, but they still aren't to their maximum potential. They should be able to go a heck of a lot faster and a heck of a lot more torque and a lot farther, you know, by simply vaporizing the fuel before it ever even gets in there. I'm talking about down to the tiniest molecule of the fuel itself.
Yep.
You know, where you're essentially turning the doggone engine into a reactor system that when, as soon as that doggone fuel hits that cylinder and the compression, combustion happens, which pushes that piston down, dude, you should be able to, with that kind of fuel, you should be able to throw that piston through the oil pan.
All right, now, wait a minute. Before the invention of chrome moly steel, it was very difficult to run a gasoline engine on just gasoline fumes. It could be done, and they did do it. But when you burn lean, real lean, like just fumes, you get excessive heat.
Well, and that's why you also got to put it into where you got doggone air coming in there. There's where the turbine comes in.
Here's where my point is, all new motors in automobiles have chrome moly valves and valve seats. There is no reason why we're burning liquid gasoline in our engines. Why aren't we using gasoline fumes? They're just as powerful.
Well, if we weren't putting it in a liquid form, there would be absolutely no reason whatsoever for the catalytic converter.
In the early 70s, I ran a Renault Dauphine, it was a Nash Rambler, six-cylinder motor on nothing but gasoline fumes for 20 minutes. And the only reason it didn't go more than 20 minutes is at 20 minutes, I turned the motor off. It was still running. I deliberately, physically turned the motor off. And the whole time I had the headlights on the car, it was sitting there idling, I burnt less than 5 cc's of gasoline, turned into fumes, and run a six-cylinder motor, 200 cubic inch motor, for 20 minutes on less than 5 cc's of gasoline, turning the alternator, running the headlights. Come on, folks.
Yep. You know what? I'll tell you,
a 4-horsepower Briggs & Stratton motor running at an idle will burn 50 cc's of gasoline per minute. Per minute.
And if you're worried about the doggone cylinders in hydrogen technology, like running an engine off of hydrogen, I've heard a lot of people talk about how, you know, you get too much heat inside there and it'll burn doggone cylinders and the valves out and that kind of stuff. That's flat out ludicrous. Sure,
if it did heat up, why not put a mist of water in it and get even more power and keep your engine running cooler?
Yeah.
If it's going to produce that much heat, use it.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Come on.
Got it.
I mean, when you got
that much heat and you dump a little drop of water on there, it's going to instantaneously expand into heat. And according to what you said, about 1,600 times its doggone volume inside a closing container.
Water, it turned into steam, it's 3.7 times stronger than gasoline.
So as far as I'm concerned, the only time you need the hydrogen is to get it started, like starting fluid.
Exactly.
The rest of the time, you just use the heat of the compression and the cylinder in order to use the doggone, turn it into a modern-day steam engine.
Steam on demand.
That's right, because when you compress air, it gets hot, real hot. I got an air compressor that's obnoxious because it's got a little oiler ring that doesn't pick up enough oil to keep up with the compression on the doggone thing, and so it gets so hot and it'll lock up. But once it locks up, all you gotta do is take a wrench and unstick it, and then it'll run again.
You know, hey, that's exactly how a diesel engine works. It has no spark plugs.
Yeah.
It's compressed the fuel, the air, so hot that when they squirt the diesel fuel in it, it ignites.
Yep, and there are hydrocarbons in diesel fuel.
So why couldn't you make the engine even more compressed so that when it did compress, and you don't inject diesel fuel, you just inject a water mist?
Yep.
Duh.
It's what they did back in the old days. They got their tractors up to operating temperature, started injecting water in there, and run it like a steam engine.
Yes, it did.
Save fuel. Well, yes, necessity is the mother of invention. If some farmers back in the day could figure this out, and the modern day tractor pull guys know it, because they got these tractors that will literally kick some booty now.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I've been to a couple tractor pulls. I love it.
Yeah. These things got enough torque to drag a dead tractor right out of the freaking mud.
Yeah.
That's buried up to his axles. Tell me that ain't power. These guys know what they're doing. I don't understand why it is that people in the auto industry wouldn't be jumping on board on this. Because the auto industry, you know, unless they own the oil industry as well, they could kick the butt of the oil industry in a hurry just by turning around and building a super efficient car.
Yep.
You know, but hey, continuity of government.
Well, think about this. The reason they don't change things, one of the reasons, is money. And people going to lose their jobs and this, that, and other. But the thing is, what you have to stop and think, it's going to create more jobs than it's going to lose.
Yeah, and they got the whole you scratch my back, I scratch yours. I won't make a more efficient car if you don't make your oil too expensive for me to buy my rubber tires or whatever.
Right. You know, the thing is, it wouldn't put the oil industry out of business at all.
No, it wouldn't.
Think about this. Think about this a minute. There are 2 quarts of oil in every automobile tire. So you're not going to put the oil industry out of business. They're just going to have to. And there's over 3,000 different medications, and I don't know how many different kinds of plastics that are made from crude oil.
Anybody?
So you're not going to put the oil industry out of business. You're just going to make the oil that's in the world last a little bit longer.
Anybody ever got the notion to think that we're going to run out of oil? I want you to go out right now, and I want you to get an oil change in your car, all right? I want you to get an oil change in your car. Now, if your car leaks oil, then this probably isn't going to work real well, so we need somebody who has a doggone car that doesn't leak oil. Go out and get the recommended mileage out of your oil, write the numbers down, and keep your doggone track of how long you can run your oil before it needs to be changed again. Then follow your oil to the oil change, and then follow it from the oil change to wherever it goes from there. It's a mystery. Da-da-da-da. Where does that oil go, man? All right? It's gone. No, it ain't. What they do is they take that doggone oil and they try to pawn it off whoever wants to take it because they got too much waste oil. Some people take it and they burn it in their doggone waste oil burners. But other people who are smart will take that oil and they will build a system like the United States Navy used to do back in 1980s and before, where when they have oil in the machinery that would build up moisture in it because you're actually dealing with steam and heat and condensation, so you actually build up water and you have to keep a fresh oil in there, and the oil gets corroded from different things. And then they heat it up, they filter it out, drain off the water, and pump the oil right back in and reuse the crud.
Yep.
So you can build an oil filtration system and have brand new fresh oil out of the crud that you're pouring out of your car and never have to buy oil again.
Every time I buy a new automobile, I change the oil every 45,000 miles religiously.
Did you keep the oil?
Yes.
See? That's my point. Why keep buying quarts of oil when you can drain your own oil, put your own oil filter on, heat the oil up, and see the viscosity of the oil is actually thick. And so when you get carbon and crud and all that stuff that you don't want in there, or even water mixed in, and it's all stuck in there like one big black cruddy mess. You heat it up, that will decrease the viscosity temporarily long enough for the heavy stuff to float to the bottom and the light stuff to float to the top, and you drain off the middle, and now you got perfectly clean, fresh oil on the other side.
Exactly, exactly. And if you're using high detergent, you just buy the chemicals and you pour it into the oil.
Yep.
It's an additive, oil additive, and you've got perfectly clean oil. And I used to do that back when I lived on my farm in North Carolina. I never threw my oil away. And the sludge at the bottom that I couldn't get separated, that had oil absorbed into it, I would actually take it out, set it in the sun, let the lighter stuff evaporate off, take the sludge, roll it up in newspaper, and use it for fuel in my wood stove.
There you go. The creosote that comes off the logs. If you're burning like hedge or doggone, what's the other stuff? The ones with the thorns, locusts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those two right there burn hot because they got oil in the doggone wood. Well, right. When that creosote builds up in your chimney and you end up cleaning it out, you end up with these black flaky pieces of crud. Well, if you never clean it out and you end up getting your chimney too hot, that stuff will literally catch fire and it'll melt your doggone stovepipe.
It will. It will melt the pipe. I mean, this stuff burns really hot.
Yeah, so you stack that stuff up there and put it in somewhere in a safe storage, and you've got some fuel made out of fuel that was wasted. It was came from your doggone wood-burning stove. And you can take the ash out of the bottom of the stove, and you can turn it into all kinds of things, from lye soap to batteries.
Yep. A little tiny bit in your garden will do a lot of good, too.
Yeah. So there you go, man. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, and the waste that's going away is costing you out your pocket. So instead of going out buying doggone fresh oil all the time, build you a doggone deal to filter out your oil. It'd be super simple. All you need is a little electric oil pump to circulate the oil through a oil filter, and then heat the oil up until it's real thin that the pump don't have to work hard. Put your solar panel on the pump so that whenever the sun's out, it's like the sun's heating the oil. The is heating the oil, and the when you're circulating that warm oil through a radiator, you can actually take that heat away and use it as electricity to run your pump with.
Yep.
Because oil will carry heat really good. That's why you put it in cars.
You know how oil smokes when you light it on fire?
Yeah.
Automobile oil? It's real bad. All right, have you seen these little brass bell-looking things that the plumbers used to use years ago? You heat the gas. They're putting that white gas in them. You pump the pressure up so it'll blow the gas, up through the nozzle. But it goes through a coil. And there's a little trough that you put a little gas in, and you light it on fire to heat the gasoline in the coil. So that when you actually light the flame, it blows like a blow. It's called a blowtorch.
Yep.
Well, if you build something similar to that, and use automobile oil, used oil, and put a little fan on it to blow air to it, this thing will burn hot enough to melt steel like that and make it run like water. There's so much heat, and there is absolutely no smoke. It's 100% burn. I've done this.
Well, what we've just explained to all you people listening out there is hardcore proof of free energy, whether you want to believe it or not. That's up to you. When you're wasting the money to going out buying your fresh oil, that's because you don't understand that you can clean the oil that you got. It's still good. It's still oil. When you don't realize that your sun can give you electricity, the wind can give you electricity, the atmosphere can give you electricity, the dirt can give you electricity, the water can give you electricity, and by separating water and water, the molecule, hydrogen and oxygen, and then the recombination in a essentially a what's the word I was looking for there, Raymond? Doggone it, when it evaporates, it condensates, a condenser.
Yeah.
You condense it back into water, you build up a static charge. So any combination, recombination, waste product, whatever, you end up with energy out the other side. So you didn't destroy nothing, you just changed the state of matter. You turn that firewood into ash, and crud to come up through the doggone deal. You notice how the black crud goes up to the top and the white crud goes down to the bottom?
Yeah, yeah.
So you just took two different elements out of them. One of them's really highly flammable and one of them's really highly caustic. What do you use caustic for? Cleaning, one. Chemical cleaning.
Oh, yes.
Batteries, two. Soap.
Natural fertilizer.
They make natural fertilizer. They make lye soap out of wood ash. Go look at all. There's like the, I've seen a list. I used to have it on here before this particular computer crashed. There was 10 uses for wood ash. All right. And one of which is, and you can try this sometime, if you're ever out and you get ice in your driveway and your car's stuck, go out there to your wood burning stove, get some wood ash and throw it under the tires, and you'll get out of there. It'll give you traction. And the other, at the other side, is a really flammable material that you could use in turn for fuel. So there you go, man. Prove their own laws of physics. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but you can change it. You can change its form. And if you understand that, then you understand that every bit of energy that's out there can be changed into a form of energy that would be useful to you as far as running the inefficient crud that we've got that we call electrical appliances and electronics and such. Electronics is going to be the easiest go because they don't take, they're not a, like a serious resistive load. Unless you're trying to pull a serious resistive load on the other side, which in turn will put too much heat to that thing, and you'll have to get rid of that heat or you'll destroy your circuitry. So, you know, with that said, there you go, man. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. It's out there. It's been proven time and time and time again. But if you listen to the college-educated individuals out there that think they're smarter than everybody and his brother because they actually got a sheepskin from the college deal, then you're never going to believe it, so you're never going to try it. And if you believe it can be done, then it can be done. If you don't believe it can be done, it can't be done. And if you do something, at least something gets done. And if you do nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done. If you want free energy, start supporting your local mad science guys or start your own mad science lab and start researching. The information's out there at your fingertips, and I don't believe it'll always be available to you because there are folks out there that are trying to make money off of everything that they got. And they're not going to want to share that money with you because you figured out a way to run your car unless, and you want to sell that product. No, it ain't going to happen like that. Go back and look at history and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. They had energy wars back in the days. They were fighting over trains. They were fighting over planes and automobiles and ships and everything under the sun. So, there you go, man. The answer's there if you want to try it. You know, the mad science show's about this. It ain't about sitting around complaining all the time, but it is sitting around talking about how it makes me angry that here it is 2016 and we're still talking about finding free energy. Just gave you many examples of where you can find free energy. Give you many examples where you can save a few bucks. Take some time to build you a oil filter system that'll clean that oil up to where it looks just like it did when it came out the store. If the U.S. Navy could do it back in the 80s, then you can do it up here in the year 2016. And there's probably, when you think about it, there are probably already systems already built that you wouldn't even have to build. You just plug it in and it does the work for you. And then you save your old bottles, fill them back up, and throw them in the trunk of your car. When you need them, you got oil. Save you a few bucks, man. Take one light at a time off the power grid. And then call it a day. And you save that money that you just you saved from not running that light bulb off the mains and invested into taking another light bulb, the next one off the main.
You said a minute ago something about people not being able to find free energy. The problem is they can't see the forest for the trees. It's all around you, people. It's everywhere you look. You can't destroy it. You can't create it. but you can move it around. You can change its form, size, shape, direction.
Yeah, that's why I said when you turn high voltage into high frequency, radio waves or whatever, and I shoot that into some argon gas and turn it into the fourth state of plasma, I ain't lost nothing.
The thing is, you cannot see the forest because you're surrounded by trees.
Yep.
Come on, man.
And if you're out there protesting save the planet and save the trees and you're holding a wooden stick with paper signs, I have to question your intelligence. You know what I mean?
Weyerhaeuser, one of the largest paper producers in the United States. Every time they cut down a tree to make paper, they plant five more.
Yep. And I don't know what more to say, man. That ain't already been said. Paper or plastic?
Me, just let me take it out with my hands. Let's save a tree and clean up the oil, the plastic.
I take it all.
Yeah, there you go.
I take both of them. You know? Look, yep. This doggone planet was set up. Literally, set up.
Shazia, I just did an experiment the other day. I didn't make a video of it, which the heck I had. And at the end, I realized I messed up. I took some acetone and I melted a whole lot of that white bubbly styrofoam.
Yeah.
And I had a pile of it. I mean, it was, I must have had 2 quarts, a half a gallon of the stuff. The acetone does not actually enter into the plastic. As you melt the plastic, it settles to the bottom and the acetone floats on top. But anyway, I took the sludge out and put it on a piece of rough cut lumber, tried to smooth it out with a paintbrush. That didn't work very well because once it's out of the acetone, it starts to solidify again really quick. So what I did is took a gob of it and threw it on another piece of really rough cut lumber and took one of my mud knives and a plastic putty knife, actually, a wide one, about 4 or 5 inches wide, and real quick, before it had time to solidify, smeared it out smooth across that wood. In 12 hours, it was dry and hard to the touch, but your fingernail could penetrate it. In 24 hours, your fingernail could not penetrate it. It dried out like a really hard plastic, smooth as a baby's butt.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I messed up, so if anybody wants to try this, I got in a hurry, and every time you get in a hurry, you're going to make a mistake, okay? So I did. I started wanting it to melt faster, so I started pushing it down into the acetone. Well, in doing so, the styrofoam at the surface of the acetone, it's melting as much as that's 2 or 3 inches down. Well, that plastic melted was trapping the air bubbles from the plastic that was deeper. Therefore, my solution was contaminated with a bunch of air bubbles. And the thing is, the plastic itself is so dense, it will not let the air bubbles rise out. So if you're going to do this, just take your styrofoam and just barely lay it on the surface of the acetone. Just barely lay it on the surface. Therefore, the air can escape, and you'll have nothing but pure plastic, liquid plastic on the bottom. And as long as that acetone, there's a layer of acetone on top, it will remain a liquid or a solution, a thick, really thick, pasty solution. And you can pull it out and come right out, slap it on something, smooth it off real quick, smooth it out, let it dry, and you've got plastic covered of whatever it is you want.
All right, well, that's great stuff. We got to run, man. It's that time again. So, basically, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science Show. I hope you learned something. Maybe we even made you laugh a time or two or something like that. Who knows? But, dude, don't call it Mad Science for nothing. So, thanks, Raymond and Justin. You got anything last you want to say real quick?
Nah, I think we said it all.
All right, we said quite a bit. So, with that said, everybody, stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Hope everybody joins in. So, peace and love. Stay tuned.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.